Welcome, everyone, to the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. Evan's out today. Got a special guest, the deputy director of social, your friend and mine. It's Jordan Zerm. We'll get into this after the break.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, thanks for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs for places like Dime on Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword, as well as hosting this podcast. My guest today, as mentioned at the top, is Jordan Zerm from the Sporting News. Jordan, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Chris, I'm great. It's been too long since I've talked the Cleveland Cavaliers with you, so it is. It's good to be back, man. How's everything on your end?
You know, it's good. Cavs world is more fun right now than navigating the other areas of Cleveland sports, dare I say.
Yeah.
You know, things are a little grimy and some other things right now. The Guardians are, of course, very fun, but that other team is a little tricky. So it's fun to talk about a team that has good vibes at the current
moment. Good vibes. The Guards have good vibes. I just went, as you know, I'm stationed in the Los Angeles area. I just went and saw them lose the only game of the series against the Dodgers. So I didn't go Friday when they won, didn't go Sunday when they won. I went Saturday where they lost 7-1. But shout out to the Guardians. They're still out here doing their thing, you know?
Yeah, you got to see them. That's the positive. I've got my Guardians hat on right now. It's immaculate.
Let's go.
Things are great.
Let's
all
go,
right.
Baby.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. Didn't plan this,
nope.
But just this is Jordan and I. We're connected.
Yep.
We're just
synergy,
we're,
baby.
We're hive mind in this. Yeah, that's hive minding. All right, we're gonna talk today in segment one about the latest with Colin Sexton. Segment two, we're gonna turn our attention to where the team is at and how we view last season, as we've had some time to get away from it in terms of thinking about it perhaps day to day. In segment three, we're just going to riff on the draft a little bit and set the tone for Thursday. Jordan, where we'll start, of course, is Colin Sexton. The latest news is that according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, he has been fully cleared to resume basketball activities. We've seen some dunking from him on via his Instagram, where he looks pretty explosive. Keeps saying the he's in the full, like, they're doubting me, the comeback is real phase.
Yeah.
Of his promotional hype train, which is always a fun phase. I think the note that is of perhaps most kind of notable in the Shawnee report is that $20 million is what Sexton's looking for. So I want to say, I think it's pretty blanket that we can say it's good that he's getting back to basketball activities. The open question is now, is $20 million a reasonable figure for the Cavs and Colin Sexton? So as I know this is a loaded, long-time loaded Cavs topic, but how do you feel about $20 million a year attached to Colin Sexton as we're about 10 days out from free agency?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff's coming up quickly. You know, it's wild to think that, you know, he only played 11 games for the Cavs last season, and it is crazy that it has been so long since we've seen him in a Cavs uniform. And really, I mean, they were starting to sort of play well when he, you know, ended up getting hurt in that game against the Clippers. I was actually at that game, so it's my fault. But he,
you need to stop going to, you need to stop going to, you have to like, just can't go to Cleveland games in LA anymore. It's unfortunate, but it's unfortunate. Yeah.
So, you know, I think when you think about that number, and I mean, it's a high number. It's a high number for what he is. And I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of debate about the player he is, the sort of player that he could maybe become on this team. I think we saw a lot of, you know, the ability Garland sort of rise allowed him at least early on to sort of play a little more off ball and not have to be a creator, which I think like is the perfect role for him. But I think like you have to ask yourself, with that amount of money, like, is it worth paying that, or is it worth, you know, finding someone else to sort of slide into that role that can kind of do a lot of what Sexton does, like maybe not to the level of scoring that he's doing, but somebody for a lot cheaper who you can kind of slide in and absorb those, you know, whatever he was averaging a game, 20 plus points per game. Yeah, I don't know. That number's tough for me just because I think, you know, and this is probably something we'll touch on too as we talk about like how we feel about last season and the success of it. But I mean, you just watch so many of these playoff teams and the ones that made it fairly far. Like if you think about the Mavericks, Warriors, Celtics, Bucks, just teams that are built in very specific ways with wings. And I think you just still see the tall wing really dominating you know, outside of Steph Curry, who is an anomaly, but like even the Warriors, Andrew Wiggins just had an incredible finals. Shout out to former Cavs legend Andrew Wiggins. But like, you're just looking at guys that are, you know, 6'7", 6'8", can handle the ball, can shoot a little bit, can play really good defense. And I just think, like, I think we knew this already. This isn't really like a new thing, but I think you're seeing, you know, even with the Mavericks, you're looking at like Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, on the wing. You're looking at like Reggie Bullock, who's like not, they're not phenomenal players by any means, but they're tall wings who can shoot and defend. And I think as we kind of go forward, that's always been the concern. It's like, okay, does it make sense to continue to have Darius Garland and Colin Sexton as a backcourt with their size and sort of deficiencies on maybe the defensive end? And, you know, Colin's never really been a great three-point shooter, although he's gotten better. So there's a lot of questions about it, but I think that number is tough when you look at what the league is, the kind of money he's asking for, and probably the alternatives to, okay, how do we replace this 20-plus points per game, which, like, the Cavs need. I mean, we obviously saw they struggled to score.
Yes.
They very much need somebody to step in and be able to do that. But is Colin Sexton at that price the right person for that? And I don't feel great about that answer.
What I think this will come down to, I think at least in the short term and beyond like the initial contract, I think remains to be seen. And I think as time has gone on, I've become more, pun intended, bullish on what Sexton could provide, because I think there is just, like, I would trust him going forward, I think, more than LeVert. And like, if I'm picking one of them, I think I would lean Sexton, even though there is the size question.
I think I would agree with you there.
Yeah, like LeVert just left me very cold in thinking about what he did last year, and that and paying him as he hits 30 could be a little tricky. I think the thing that I feel really only strongly about right now in relation to Sexton is that they can't let him walk for nothing. If he gets offered $20 million flat as an RFA from, let's say, the Pistons, the Cavs, I think, are in a position where they kind of have to match that, and even if they trade him a year from now, there's not just a way I think they can let him go for nothing, because the salary is going to remain tight going forward. He's better than a lot of the guys they already have, right? Like, he's better than, like, he's a more proven NBA player, health issue aside, assuming he comes back and everything, better than Okoro, you know, better than some of the other draft, Windler, like these other guys that they've drafted. He's not at the Garland Mobley tier, but he's above sort of the other guys. And if he's $20 million, and he's your kind of your chip, you can, I think, let him just like walk for nothing this summer. I think that's where I think this will be interesting. Do they decide we just keep him and figure it out? Is there an immediate sign and trade that happens with him for a team that's interested in that can get the Cavs something they want? And then what would the Cavs want? Like, do they want future assets to replenish their cupboard in that direction? Do they want a player right now that helps them run? It's a more veteran player. Like, Evan and I talked about this on Monday's show, so I'll ask you this as we wrap this up. Would like a Jeremy Grant centered sign and trade for Sexton appeal to you? If you're thinking about this, would he just, Grant is the headliner thing you're getting back from Detroit. Like, is that enough? And if it's not enough, like, what else would you want, I guess, in conjunction with
that? Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. I mean, I think Sexton has always sort of been the one sort of trade chip the Cavs do have in terms of like a bit of a haul that you could bring back. And I think that's like, you know, they're in a good position there in terms of, like you said, yeah, like, okay, maybe they, you know, they match whatever he gets and then engage in some sort of sign and trade and use him for that. Like, I've always thought he's sort of been that chip to hold on to use in a future trade, something like that. I think, you know, with Jeremy Grant, he obviously fits a lot of like what the Cavs need, like a tall wing who can defend and shoot. I'm not sure what his shooting numbers were last season with the Pistons, and I know he had some injury. You know, he's also a guy that's dealt with a lot of injury stuff, similar to Colin Sexton. So, like, you know, not the most like reliable guy, but a guy that I think proved that he can, you know, thrive as more than what he was in Denver. It's the reason he went to Detroit. I mean, I think that intrigues me. I think maybe you would ask for, you know, a pick also kind of in return in that deal. I wonder if that's something the Pistons would be willing to part with. But I mean, that's something that definitely intrigues me, Chris. I think I am very much on the, I appreciate like what Colin Sexton is and what he does. And he would have been an immense help to the Cavs when they went through scoring droughts, when they had Darius on the bench, or when they just couldn't, you know, break down no one else on the team could make their own shot off the dribble. But I have very much always been in the camp of like the Cavs just to really take a legitimate step forward. I think more so than what I think Colin Sexton can help them do. I think that wing position, a productive wing, is going to be the answer to that. So I think you talk about somebody like a Jeremy Grant and somebody in sort of that ilk, like that's something that's pretty intriguing to me. So I think it's a great question. I think I would lean towards really exploring that. But I think I am of the mind of that what a wing could do for the Cavs is more sort of important than I think what Colin Sexton in his current build can do for the Cavs as they try to sort of build this team towards the next step.
I very much cannot wait for Kobe Altman to get asked about this on draft night and answered in very specifically Kobe Altman ways that he kind of has to, obviously, but certainly will be sort of like, interesting for him to.
You know, Colin's been working so hard, and he's a, you know, we think he is a huge part of this team. We moving forward.
You know, I'm focused on the guys in front of me that we drafted. Now, that's who I'd really like to talk.
This press conference is not about Colin Sexton. This press conference is about us moving up to number one in the draft. So thank you. Those are all the questions I'll be taking.
Zerm with the breaking news.
Yeah, this is folks, this is breaking news. The Cavs are looking to move from 14 to 1. It's just what I'm hearing right now.
And it's really just in his own head. All right. One Live NBA Draft Show, by the way, is not enough for Lockdown. Every show is going live on draft night. So join me 15 minutes after our pick on Lockdown Cavs on YouTube for the immediate reaction from your local expert. Subscribe to Lockdown Cavs now so you know when I go live and do that hit. Also going to tell you about our friends at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. All you have to do is pick 2 to 5 players and the over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus those projected numbers. Prize Picks is safe and offer fast withdrawals. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Prize Picks offers any prop you can think of, from points scored to rebounds and even steals. They offer mixed sports entries as well. And Prize Picks doesn't just offer NBA. They have options on college basketball, college football, NFL, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. For a limited time, Prize Picks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our users. Users get $50 free when you use the code NBA. That's when you get $50 free if a player in your first prize pick entry scores a single point and use the code NBA. That's right. That's an exclusive offer available to Locked On fans. Sign up today and use code NBA for 50 free if a player in your first prize pick entry scores a single point. All right, we're back here in Locked On Cavs. Jordan Zerm from The Sporting News is with us. Find him on Twitter at Jordan Zerm. Jordan, here's I think the other question I think kind of informs the Sexton discussion and I think is a good bridge to thinking about the draft on Thursday. How has, as time gone on, your view of what the Cavs did last season changed? Are you higher on it? Are you lower on it? Are you the same on it? And does that inform what you think this team is at in any different way? Like, now that we've had time to get away from that season a little bit, where are you at on what last season was and where this team could be going in the immediate future and what that could say about what they maybe need to do Thursday and in free agency coming up?
Yeah, I love this question because I think it is far enough removed now where you're like, man, it feels like forever since I've watched the Cavs play basketball and I'm ready to watch them play again. I think what is nice about the Cavs season is that I think their struggles were very clear. And I think so the path forward for them, I think obviously it's a combination of signing the right guys in free agency and the draft. But like Chris, we talked about ad nauseum, like Ricky Rubio going down and them not being able to find really that secondary ball handler who can create was devastating to them. They obviously tried with Rajon Rondo and that really did not work out in any way, shape or form. They just didn't have anybody else who could really allow Garland to play off the ball like he was so successful doing when him and Rubio shared the court early in the season. I mean, their numbers, that five-man lineup with Ricky and Garland, those numbers were astronomical. Like, they were great. It was a small sample size, but, like, I don't think those numbers lied.
Rubio helped make, like, Jetty Osmond a much more stable player. Yep. Like, I don't – the numbers aren't exactly as totally clear as everything sort of is in that way. Like, it doesn't say like it's black and white and who is good and who is bad with and without Rubio and paint that exact picture. I just think about back to the season. It's like Jetty didn't feel as comfortable and as trusted by the coaching staff once he went down.
For sure. So I think like that's a very clear, like, okay, whether it's like looking at a guy like Trey Jones in free agency or somebody who can really fill that void, like that is a clear, like, hey, if we do this, like this is going to help our team. I think the other thing, I think where I'm a little bit lower on like repeating success is like the Lauri Markkanen thing to me is going to be really interesting moving forward, because I think you saw sort of like what his limits are and why he was like, I have a friend that is a Bulls fan and he was like, Lauri Markkanen like drove us insane. And I think like you can see exactly why, because like he's so tantalizing and he has games where when he's knocking down threes and playing aggressive, you're like, this is a really good basketball player. And then there's other games where he just disappears. And I think, you know, this three big lineup with Jarrett, with Evan and with Lauri that they really were like, you know, hanging their hat on as their identity. I just am not sure that is going to be able to continue as we sort of move into the future. I think it's a great idea. It was really fun. And obviously Evan and Jarrett are going to be able to hold their own against anybody. And like, they're good to go. But the Lauri thing is like, I got to the point where it's like, does it even make sense to start him? Like, is this a guy that should be coming off the bench? Like, there is just, I think, because of his inconsistencies as a basketball player, that unfortunately I think is just like part of his DNA now. Like, he's been in the league long enough where it's like, this might just sort of be what you're going to have to deal with. I think that's where I'm a little bit lower on like the success. But I think the flip side of that is then, you know, you add more good players to the team and you don't have to rely as heavily on like, hey, we have to trot these guys out here because these are our best, especially like offensively. This is sort of our best option right now. So I guess my answer there is twofold in that I'm a little bit maybe lower on like, okay, there may have been some things they did that aren't necessarily going to carry over to the next season. But on the flip side of that, it's like, hey, we know what they need. And they're in positions to add to those places of need. And then you just think about Evan Mobley's growth. Like, I'm so hyped to see year two Evan Mobley and Darius Garland's continued growth and having Jared Allen hopefully healthy all season. Like, there's a lot of reasons to be really optimistic about, okay, they can kind of pivot to some things and add some guys and be better than they were last season because they'll have more of the abilities to do the things that they struggled with last season. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much right. I think what I think is true is that you should be banking on Garland, Mobley, and Allen being your identity. But like you're saying, how does Mobley level up now that he's 21 in year two of the league? How does Garland look with another year under his belt and another offseason, all that stuff? And we would assume like a probably a lucrative contract extension this summer if things kind of go the way they seem. I think the thing that and Markkanen is perhaps the best cipher for this, but also like what they do at the end of the roster, what kind of veterans they go after in free agency. Like, do they try to recreate the Rubio magic in some way? Do they like, honestly, like, do they try to bring back Rubio and say like, we'll play you when we need you? I mean, it was clear last year they like went out and got Rajon Rondo like right after Rubio went down because they felt they needed that presence. Do they feel like they need that presence again? Are they, you know, like Monty Morris is apparently like available. Do they make a play for someone like that on the market to go get a veteran to back up Darius and shoulder that kind of load and play it that way? You know, do they lean into this? You know, if they did like a Jeremy Grant thing, for instance, like he would almost continue the weirdness of their front court because he's another big guy who kind of is more of a four, but he can step out and play the three. Like there is something to like, do you lead in more into that identity or are you going to like find a Gary Harris with your MLE? Are you going to find a wing like that with the MLE? Like I know like there's like, they like Bruce Brown. Like, would you chase someone like that? Even though he's not exactly the stretchiest guy, he makes his threes at a decent clip, but like he's taking under two a game. That's not a stretchy player in the same way, but he would theoretically help you. How they, I think they, within, obviously, like, some of this will be dependent on who says they want to come to Cleveland, Sexton's market, who's available at 14, all that stuff. But, like, how they, I think, answer some of these questions. I feel like this, Jordan, is the summer that I feel like we learn a lot about what Kobe Altman's kind of vision for what he likes and doesn't like about once he has some pieces in places. This is the summer where, like, you have done the hard part now, and you have some stability, in theory, with his extension and JV's extension. Where does that potential security and some maneuverability, not like limitless, but some ability to kind of maneuver and add stuff here. What does that look like for you? And also, how long of a game are you playing here with this roster? Because like, I don't think Like, I think going all in on next year would be silly. I don't think that you try to maximize whatever next year is. Like, I don't think that makes sense. But, like, should you try to improve on next year? And, like, competitively, does that make sense to me? Yes, I think that's what the good organizations do. I'm also not, like, saying next year's the end-all be-all and its chips are all the way down next year. Like, you still, I think, have to look ahead a little bit considering how young your really good players are. And that's what I think makes this so tricky. It's like, I think a lot of last year was real, but I think we're going to find out what Kobe Altman thinks was real about it as we go forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like the Cavs so often get compared to the Hawks in terms of like their sort of developmental timeline. And the Hawks, you know, made that huge leap two seasons ago where they were like, all right, we're going all in and we're adding Gallinari and we're getting Bogey and like we're doing all these things. And, you know, yes, they made the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think that was a like a bit fluky. And then you sort of see them kind of disappear this season and get absolutely demolished by the Heat in the first round. And now the Hawks have like a ton of decisions that they have to figure out about that roster and how they want to construct it. And I think what you don't want to do is sort of, yeah, like you said, like go all in and sort of throw money at people and free agents and bring them in and not really get to the place that you want to go. And I think you got to be really careful there. So yeah, no, it'll be really fascinating. I'm like, you know, I'm fascinated to see how they feel. Like, what is their view of Isaac Okoro? Like, what do they think Isaac Okoro is? Like, that is going to be a looming question continually as we go forward. So I'm really fascinated to see, like you said, like what Kobe's vision of this roster is and who he thinks is like, yeah, like, is Okoro a guy that's going to continue to start and, you know, like be a guy you're playing like 30 plus minutes? Like, it's just going to be very fascinating and it is a big offseason. But I agree with you in that, like, I think next season, while like hopefully the playoffs would be a goal, it isn't the sort of like, yeah, like we have to get to, you know, win a playoff round or bust. I think they are still so, so young that you should give that time to this team to develop a bit more before you start really kind of like pushing the pedal down.
Well, and like if you're going to give out the extensions that you did to Bickerstaff and Altman, the point of that I think is to actually have stability and build what is here. And if you're going to like push all in to achieve something in the short term, that seems like opposite in tandem of what those extensions to me at least sort of signal. So that's all right. After the break, let's turn to the draft a little bit. I'm going to ask Jordan about what prospects he likes, or what last calls about what free agents he likes as well. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at Rock Auto. Excuse me. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever increasing number of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain parts auto store to stock all the parts you need. Why would you endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning like, "Is your Odyssey an LX or an EX?" and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts in their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com. At home and in your pocket. Save time and money using Rock Auto. You could spend 30%. You could spend 30, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts if you buy them from a chain or at a car dealership. For instance, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 at a chain store. It's only $216. 216 is a good area code, in my opinion, at Rock Auto. It's a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And check them out today. I know Evan, two summers ago, saved a bunch of money buying a part from Rock Auto for his air conditioner in his car. It works, folks. This is the real deal. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box? They know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. All right, last segment here with Jordan Zerm from The Sporting News. I'm Chris Manning from Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword. Jordan, what group, I would ask you this maybe in this way. This is maybe a more fun way of asking this. Do you have more interest in what could happen in the draft on Thursday or in free agency about 10 days from now?
I think I'm more into free agency. I think like when you, 14 is a spot where it's like you gotta do some digging, you know? And even those guys, it's like, could be very hit or miss. I will say like Cavs Twitter has really put me on to Jalen Williams. That's been he's been a hot name amongst Cavs Twitter. So I've been enjoying
the thing that he is, I think right now, the classic guy that people get really hyped about. And then like he goes to another team and you're like, oh, well.
Yeah. And then you forget about him and like never think about him again.
Yeah, this is going to be me with David Roddy if David Roddy is not a Cavalier, because I'm like obsessed with this thick king from Colorado State, and he's going to like end up like on a team I don't watch a lot, and it's going to be sad, but like ultimately like I hope he just, you know, does well.
Yeah, I think like for me the problem when the Cavs are picking this late in the draft is that like I am just so unfamiliar with like so many of the guys that they're like attached to, aside from Abaji for Kansas, who obviously like I've watched, but I'm not like yeah. huge on him. But I think like between, and then like Malachi Branham from Ohio State, obviously just an Ohio State kid. But I, like, to be honest, I just didn't watch that much Ohio State basketball last season. So like, I don't feel like I have a great feel for these guys. I think like this week I will do a lot more sort of like reading about them, but it's hard to be as, you know, when you're in the top 10, it's so much easier to get like into and excited about sort of the prospects and do deep dives on them. And I sort of haven't done that as much as I have in the past. So I definitely think free agency intrigues me a little bit more than sort of the draft on Thursday.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, it was much easier last year, like thinking about like Evan Mobley or Jalen Green
yeah.
and just like that, like those guys were much more visible. There's just a lot more stuff you can go read about them compared to some of these guys later on in the draft. Not that there's not really good draft coverage about some of these guys, but like, again, like it's just a little different. I think free agency is the right answer just because I don't know, like the Cavs don't have like limitless money,
yep.
right? Like I think they're gonna have to be creative in what solutions they find. The roster is fairly full, even if there's clear spots to be improved on. Like I want to see what kind of guys they get linked to and who they actually can get. Like, you know, I think Gary Harris, who I mentioned before, makes so much sense
yep.
as a wing option they could get him.
Well, I remember at the
look Rubio
at the trade.
Yeah,
I was just
they were linked to him with the they were linked to him with the trade deadline.
Like, Gary Harris was a name, and he's sort of, you know, like people have forgotten about him because he's just been chilling in Orlando, and truly no one cares about Orlando. So like I think people forgot like what he can when he's right, like the type of shooting he can bring and the playmaking he can bring. So yeah, Gary Harris.
And
is a
and
name.
It seems like yeah, and like he had that core injury that really derailed. Yep. him in Denver. It seems like that has healed in a meaningful way, so that's good. You know, like we'll see what happens with Rubio. There is some Cavs Rubio like stuff in the ether. We'll see what that kind of looks like. Like TJ Warren, you know, coming off a very tricky injury situation, but like if he's right, like that guy makes a ton of sense for you as well.
Yep.
You know what happens with Sexton, obviously. Like, I think free agency, if we're looking at just next year, like will be a more impactful thing for Cleveland than I think the draft. Like I think if they get someone like Branham or Abaji or like pick one of the four type forward combo types or whatever,
yep.
I think some of those guys could help them a year from now, 2 years from now. I think it's wise to use those picks. Maybe, you know, use your top second round pick, maybe get back up into the first if you want to use that second and some cash to move up and get some guys you like. I think you have to keep replenishing that well as much as you can. I think that's a step forward as we're kind of going here and trying to maximize what this is. I think all the really good teams are going to do that. I also just think free agency is going to matter more for the next like year to 2 years. And it's like, there's some interesting point guards. Like if they want to recreate the Rubio thing, do they chase DeLon Wright?
Yep.
Tyus Jones is a different mold, but like would make some sense. You know, again, Rubio will be out there. Like you have some interesting wings, but other teams will want them. Some of these other guys could go to get money from teams that have cap space, but like the Cavs will have the MLE. Can they get like one or one and a half guys with one guy kind of being a flip of a coin and how effective they'll be? I think you could find some stuff that is interesting to me. And I think, again, stuff that will be more impactful, you know, in 2022, 2023 than like the 14th pick probably will be, odds are.
Yeah, no, most definitely. Yeah, I think like, you know, when you mentioned like Monty Morris is such an intriguing name. He, you know, he played really well in the playoffs against the Warriors. He was, you know, he's out with Jamal Murray and MPJ out. He was like their second best player, like with yeah. Nikola Jokic. So like there's some really intriguing names. I think, yeah, I think I called Tyus by his brother's name earlier. I called him Trey, but Tyus is the guy that, yeah, that's really, you know, he fits like almost exactly what I think the Cavs want in a backup point guard. He's obviously going to be, you know, pricier than Rubio would be, but like, yeah, is that a direction that you want to go? Is that a guy that you want to have relieved Garland of some ball handling duties? I think that's what is nice, like when I mentioned in the previous segment about like they have clear holes, and I do think there are guys in this free agency class that like if you're able to sign them for the right amount and depending on which direction you want to go, like can really fill those holes and like you said, like making an immediate impact. But no, I think like they're in a great position in the draft too, where like there's no pressure on the 14th pick to like, yeah, have to come in and be like, yo, we need you to score 20 a game. Like they're not in that position anymore. And that's great. I think that's, especially when you're picking late like this, if you want to give guys time to develop and let them kind of figure out their game and where they fit best, like this is the team now that you can start to do that a little bit. And that's a really good position to be in.
Is there a draft prospect or a free agent that you have in terms of like just thinking about this a little bit? I know I'm putting you on the spot,
yeah.
But is there anyone that you have thought about more than anyone else for whatever reason? Is there anyone you've come back to and just thinking about for either one of those categories? Anyone you've thought about a lot for whatever reason?
Well, honestly, I think just because of the Grizzlies playoff run, like I thought a lot about Tyus Jones because I do think his shooting is so important, and I do think like he is a still youngish guy that like could be
26,
yeah, could be a guy that comes in and gives you even more than what Rubio did. Now he's probably not the passer that Rubio is, but he's also doesn't turn the ball over as much as Rubio does. So it's like,
yeah, maybe not the I think the defender thing is the other thing about that. It's like, he's just not going to be 6'3" and like kind of big like Rubio
for sure. But he really intrigues me. And so I've thought a lot about him and sort of like how he would add to the Cav roster. And honestly, like I had sort of briefly forgotten about Gary Harris after sort of that flirtation the Cavs had at the trade deadline. But after you brought him up, like I've liked Gary Harris for a really long time. Like I loved him when he was on the Nuggets before he sort of, you know, struggled with those injuries and kind of fell off. And now he's toiling in Orlando. But like, that's a guy that's really intriguing to me. A dynamic scorer when he's right, like a guy that can get you buckets and a good shooter. So those are probably the two names that stand out to me the most and probably like I get me as excited. I think DeLon Wright is really interesting just because of his size and his ability to sort of handle the ball too. But I think I would go – I mostly – Tyus has probably been top of mind and bringing back up Gary Harris I think is really intriguing.
Yeah. DeLon Wright is probably it for me. Like, I almost would put Tyus as, like, my third. Without having done, like, the let me think about this and look at the numbers and watch some tape and, like, think about this. I almost have him, like, third in my backup point guard options behind if I was going to say Monty and DeLon, maybe ahead of Tyus. And that's only, like, a size thing. I think Gary Harris just feels like the free agent that would make a ton of sense.
Yep.
And maybe like Pat Connaughton like doesn't pick up his player option and he could be like the money thing comes real for him, but maybe he goes back. I think like trying to find one of those veteran wings and trying to like hope you can find something with one of those guys feels kind of necessary out of this group. Just to like give yourself something on the wing that you can that maybe JB is gonna trust a little bit more than like Dylan Windler and Jetty Osman and like And I think like what also they do with those guys, if they're on the roster, if those trade chips are cashed, as much as they are trade chips, is more than like contract salary matching, how aggressive they are to like make some moves outside of their kind of open cash limits. Look, I understand like people, we keep getting comments about how like Dan Gilbert's very rich and like that family's very rich. And I understand that there are like structural limits to how like they can spend as a team. So like that is the context of this is like, yes, they have a kind of theoretically limitless capital. There's also just like league rules on how much they're really going to spend and incentivize them to spend. So like thinking about it in that sort of context is important. The draft is just going to be, I want some weird. All I want in the draft is maybe not even M14. I just want some weird.
I want Chet to go to OKC and I want him to start with Poku and I want them to play together all the time just because I just want the visual of that. I don't even care how they play. They could be terrible. Chet could be awful. Who knows? But I just want them, these two just like willowing like skeletons to just be playing next to each other. That's it. That's all I ask from this draft. You know, just let Chet go to OKC. Let Shea and Josh Giddey and Poku and Chet. I mean, what an incredible, they'll be my second favorite team. Like there's no question. So like, that's all I want from this draft.
Yeah, I just if the my only firm draft take is that I think the Cavs would be like lighting a pick on fire if they took a center at any pick.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do that.
Like that's my only firm draft take. Like, you could talk me into Abaji, Branham, Tari Eason, Jalen Williams, like there's like 12 dudes, 10 dudes you could talk me into at 14 depending on who's there. And it like seems like the Dyson Daniels like who I think would make a ton of sense like
his stock has flown up unfortunately.
Yeah, it seems like he's going 7, so like, or in that range at least. So like, I think you just gotta, whoever they take will be intriguing. And I think how they approach 39, that other second round pick, because I just don't think they're gonna have three rookies on the roster. That's just like the number of guys they already have signed plus, like, it just doesn't seem likely to me. So like, do they trade those? Do they draft stash a guy? Do they, you know, trade up back into the first to get someone? Like there's guys I like that I think that they really have liked in this process that are not necessarily guys that are necessarily fully at the top of their list at 14. and how this plays out and what they kind of say after the fact will be really interesting.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Draft night's fun, and it's more fun when you get a little – like, last year was very fun, but we kind of knew it was probably going to be Mobley at this point. Like, it was kind of locked up. This is a little more like –
yeah.
What are the Kings going to do ahead of this? What are the Blazers going to do with their pick?
What if Jaden Ivey says, hey, Kings, absolutely not, like, after they draft him? You know, like, it's just going to be – we love the ride. So, no, it'll be fun. It's also fun to, like, not have to be super stressed out about the Cavs taking the wrong person at number two, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, last year's really worked. I mean, look, the thing is that, like, you're going to get something that is silly. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, like, there's one of the latest things is that, like, you have AJ Griffin, like, might slide out of the top 10.
And that's why the draft week is the best, because the rumors start going and people start sliding and teams are getting anxious. And no, it's great. It's wild to me that it's on Thursday. Like, it's come up very quickly. No, I'm ready for it, man. It's, you know, unfortunately, after the draft, you have the bit of the dead period before training camp. But man, I miss them. I miss my guys, you know? I miss my boys.
Look, as someone who would like to... I needed, like, 2 months to, like, kind of get my brain right. I feel like this has been a nonstop grind since, like, we were in Vegas for Summer League last year. And, like, this... I'm going to, like, peter out, hit, like, July 15th.
We
and
might
be
still...
like, please, no more signings.
We might still be in that hotel room. There's actually no telling if we left or if we've just, like, continued to be there.
You actually just vaporized by the pool.
I did.
You just...
I am a puddle. I am a puddle living by that pool now.
Well, it's really seeing Bill DiFilippo in a Brady Quinn jersey on the strip, and just we ascend to heaven at that point. It's over at that point. And seeing Paige Bueckers walk across amid a stream of protesters was also just like a lot of things. If you like basketball, just go to Summer League. I am not going this year because it's much earlier in the summer and I have some other things, and like I just, you know, Evan Mobley makes it less likely interesting for me to go and cover stuff. But go, it's fun. I recommend it. Until next time, this has been Locked On Cavs. Follow Jordan on Twitter at Jordan Zerm. Check him out and running the socials and doing great stuff over at The Sporting News. We'll be back tomorrow. Rafael Barlow from the NBA Big Board show, from the NBA Big Board newsletter on Substack. He's going to come through. We're going to talk about the options at 14 as nerdily as possible because Rafael is the best. Stay tuned for that. Hope everyone's well. Be well, and talk to you soon.